Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is The Bench. The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Presented by Coors Light. Whatever your mountain, climb on. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas. Here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Lance and Adam once again, and we are celebrating another Houston Astros victory as they have taken the show on the road and started punishing teams that, frankly, Adam, we felt like they were going to punish. People who looked at this at this schedule and everyone who said, and look, there were a lot of people who said, don't fret about the Astros versus the Indians and Red Sox and Yankees because just look what they're going to feast on once that's over.
Feasting's probably a good word since Evan Gattis is going caveman on everybody, just beating people down with his bat.
He is clubbing people right now. Another five RBI game. So back-to-back five RBI games. I'm not able to watch the Houston broadcast. Did they have any stat on when the last time that was that something like that happened?
Well, the last time it happened for the Astros was right around never.
Is that the first time?
First Astro to go back-to-back five-plus RBI games. Also, in Gattis's case, Todd Callis kept going on and on about this, and I see why. He had played 633 games of his career without having a single game of more than four RBIs, and then he did it in back-to-back games.
Wow. His whole career, he had never had back-to-back four RBI games.
More than four RBI. So he had five in each of the last two games. The Astros have won seven in a row. They're on their way to their second sweep. If they can manage to win a Justin Verlander start today. All the while, this, I don't know, for some reason it finally struck me that what the Astros are doing right now is reverse to what happened to them last year with the Indians, although we're way earlier in the season and the Mariners aren't the Indians. When the Indians went on that ridiculous 22-game winning streak, they had a whale of a time catching the Astros, who are just kind of going along doing what they did all season. And eventually, near, you know, when they got towards the end of that streak, they finally passed them. And obviously, they did have that record slightly better than the Astros when it was all said and done. I'm sure Seattle will fall off at some point. The Astros are in the midst of what should be a good month-long streak of domination, and they're still a half game back of the Mariners.
Well, and it's the back end of the lineup. I mean, I know John has preached all season long, but when the back half of the lineup gets going a little bit, that's when the Astros become just a different team. And you had a couple knocks for Jake Mariznick. Marwin Gonzalez.
Wait. How many hits did Jake Mariznick have?
A couple.
Are you sure?
That's his first time in his career, Todd Callis said. First ever two-hit game for Jake Mariznick.
Well, when did he have his second hit? In the ninth inning?
I guess so. And I'm just looking at this.
And who'd he hit it off of?
You tell me.
Should I tell you? I'm going to tell you.
Wait a minute. Oh, we had position player.
Yeah, man. I mean, come on.
Oh, I can't count that.
I mean, I know everybody swoons for Jake, and it's Jake Day when he homers, and it's, you know, homers for hugs, and it's a good old time there in the Astros clubhouse and in the dugout. And why not? They've won seven in a row, and look at me.
He bombed off position player.
But he did steal a home run in the previous inning and turned it into a double play. So maybe I shouldn't be so hard on the guy.
No, he's taken enough. Trust me. He's taken enough all year long.
So, yeah, he homered off a position player. He did only strike out one time.
That's good. One out of four. And if he had struck it against a position player, I don't think he would have come back from that. That would have been hard to come back from. Evan Gattis, so he's up to 13 home runs now. Evan Gattis has gone on an absolute tear. He's up to 13 home runs. He is so confident looking at the plate right now. But jumping on teams, like, you're starting to see offensively, you just look at the run the Astros are on right now offensively. Now, Okay, it hasn't been against great teams. I'll give you that. But I just want to see the Astros jump on teams. I just want to see the bats get going. And that's what they've been doing. And this sample size has gotten pretty good. They had you tweeted yesterday, okay, the Astros are up 10-0 right now in the second inning. Guess how many runs they will have scored by the time that I'm, you know, on the show with Lance tomorrow morning. Now, 13, I felt disappointed that they only got three more for the rest of the game. I wanted to see if they could get into the 20s. But it sure is interesting to see what happens when one guy gets red hot at the back end of the lineup. But then, you know, it's also been Yuli, who produced again yesterday. Correa early helped you extend the lead. You had Marwin getting a bomb as well. So, Gerrit Cole, I'm not going to say concerned. I hate using that word. And baseball's, you know, we get a little hypercritical sometimes in a long season, especially with a good team. I'm just going to throw a number out there. Gerrit Cole, in his first seven starts, all seven, he went at least 6 2/3. He pitched into the seventh. Over his last seven starts, he's failed to pitch into the seventh in five of those seven starts. His effectiveness, he hasn't been as effective. There's a very clear distinction between April splits, May splits, and now June splits. Anything to that?
He's had an issue with the home run ball almost throughout. Yep. And I think that's all it comes down to. He went through a good run at the beginning of the season. You know, gave up just three homers in his first eight starts. He's given up eight homers in the six starts since. Three-run homer in yesterday's game. That puts three runs on the board when maybe you really only made one or two bad pitches, which I'm sure Dallas Keuchel probably thinks he did. Yesterday's game, I imagine he probably could have given him another inning were they not sitting on a 10 spot. Really was no need to push him that far. I'm not concerned, period, but I also didn't expect him to finish the season with an ERA under two. You know, what he's doing now is kind of what I expected him to do. He's been a very competent top three of the rotation starter, right, even including these down starts that you're referencing. That's probably more of who he was going to be, but the idea that he can give you an unbelievable start kind of at a moment's notice or in a pinch or in a great situation or late in the year or in the playoffs, now we know there's no question that's there.
Well, I mean, he allowed 31 home runs. That was the big issue last year, was his problems with home runs. So this is, you know, this is continuing a little bit for him, not at the same pace, but it is something that he probably is going to have to, and the Astros are going to have to keep an eye on, because let's face it, he's still really good. Where he gets in trouble is you don't want to, your home runs, if you can limit the home runs to being solo home runs, Cole's going to be fine. The Astros are going to be fine.
Well, just remember this yesterday when you were talking about Keuchel, and I ran through the number of starts he has this year where he's given up more hits than innings pitched in that particular game. Gerrit Cole in 14 starts has given up more hits than innings in a start zero times, including yesterday. He's never given up more hits than innings he's given the Astros in any given start. Not any one time. He's still
pretty
all right.
Impressive. Pretty dominant. Pretty dominant. The Houston Astros win again, and they are doing what they had to do, which is just completely torment the bad teams. It's one of the things they needed to do before All-Star break. You know, they're a couple games off the pace, Wex, from last year's team, record-wise. And I guess it feels like it. It doesn't feel like it necessarily because you haven't been beating up on the Indians and you haven't been, you know, taking out the Yankees to this point. So I guess that's why it doesn't feel the same, because they were beating the good teams early. But when you look at the final totals, they're very, very similar. I mean, ultimately you still need to play well against the good teams. You can't just be a lamb killer because you have to beat good teams in the postseason. We saw the Astros do it last year with challenging situations thanks to their bats and Verlander starts. And so we'll see if the same recipe can happen.
Just be a realist. You expect to go play, you know, 10, 15 games against the Indians, Yankees, and Red Sox and win 13 of them? No. Yeah. You're not going to do that in the playoffs, and you're not going to do that now. But you have to be competitive with them. You have to be able to win 8 out of 15, 9 out of 15. Remember last year's postseason? They beat the Red Sox in 4. they had to go the distance in each of their other two series. They didn't run roughshod over these teams. They won one more game than each of them, talking about the Yankees and the Dodgers. That's the baseball that you're going to see in the playoffs. That's the nature of the quality of those teams, and that's literally what's happened this year when they ran through that Red Sox, Yankees, Indians stretch of games. They, you know, that's how competitive they were. It was basically even. They were a game under against those teams during that stretch. Well, one changed pitch and they're a game over, and all of a sudden they're World Series champs. The good news is they will clean up on everybody else. They will win 100 games, and what they'd like to do is probably go ahead and win a division so you're not faced with the idea of potentially seeing the Yankees or Red Sox as a wild card winner yourselves. I mean, right now the Astros are in the wild card game. The defending World Series champs, who are pretty good and playing well, would be relegated to the wild card game against the Yankees.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's where it's going to be, then that's where it's going to be. It's okay when you have the type of pitching they have, but we'll see. I mean, let's see if the Mariners can do what they're doing. You know, let's see if the teams who are surprising early in the year, the Astros are built to, they're frankly built to last. They really are. And I've never had any problem or any concerns about the hitting, to be honest with you. I know John had that issue early. I didn't have it. I am concerned about closing out games consistently with the bullpen, and I think rightfully so, and I think the Astros are too, and that's why I think a deal will get done. I do think that, you know, making sure that you optimize your lineup at the back end is going to be important. I continue to be puzzled why Mariznick gets so many, you know, looks at the plate. I assume that's going to end at some point, but do you have any insight into that? I mean, this is not like it. You don't have to do this
because you're going through the motions of a regular season.
Well, this isn't Bogar or Ever. Like, why? But why is he getting this many at bats? I just don't understand that.
Because everybody on the roster, when AJ Hinch's manager, gets at bats.
Yeah, I mean, this has been a lot.
It's a ton for a guy hitting 164. It's a, you know, DFA type stats that he's posting up. But Tony Kemp's not going to play every single game. Josh Reddick, these guys are all, they all get scheduled days off. The Astros know what they're doing very much. I hate even comparing them to the Spurs, but that's how they've kind of gone about this regular season through 69 games. Guys get scheduled days off, and they don't really even care what the situation is, you know, on the field. It's more about, well, here's where we're traveling to. Here's the day off. Here's the day game after the night game, and this is how we're doing it. I mean, clearly Tony Kemp is giving this team 10 times more than Jake Mariznick did, and you're not having enough of a drop-off in the outfield defensively where it's even warrants part of the discussion. Tony Kemp has, I'm not going to say turned this offense around, but the whole point of having a guy who can hit and speed at the end of the lineup in the nine holes to have a second leadoff hitter for George Springer. And that's exactly what Jake Mariznick can't do the way he's playing this year. He kills innings. He ends innings. He ruins rallies. And Tony Kemp's done just the opposite. And yet, like yesterday, you see Jake get a start against a right-handed pitcher. And it's only because the Astros are going to win anyway. And the Astros are going to win this division anyway. And they're going to go on a long run over the next month before the All-Star break anyway. Just watch.
If you guys want to jump in, 713-780-3776, 713-780-3776. When we come back, there is a very interesting precedent that Gerard Pique cited in terms of why Spain has a chance to still win the World Cup despite changing changing their managers just 2 days before the World Cup. That's pretty unusual. And what was more unusual was the example that he came up with, which clearly somebody had to have come up with this for him. And we'll get to that here in a second. You'll be very surprised by this one. Let's tell you about something you won't be surprised by, and that's because I've been telling you about Prime Social. Prime Social is a poker house here in Houston, but it is a luxury poker mansion because it is a huge place, great big vaulted ceilings. They have brand new felt tables that were just made for them, oversized leather chairs. It's a luxury poker outlet for you with 29 different televisions that surround the entire playing area, a VIP, a high rollers area for the high stakes games. And today, they're starting you know, tonight they're open 24 hours until Sunday, through Sunday. They're going to be 24 hours a day. So if you get an itch to play some poker at any time during the day, run on in this weekend and go play at Prime Social. They will have games going on at 3 a.m., at 5 a.m., cash games, 1 and 3, no limit hold'em. They've got pot limit Omaha. They've got tournaments that go on every single day at noon. Last week, I was in the final table and won $200 at the final table. You can do the same thing. Every single day is a tournament at 2, except on Sunday when the tournament starts the tournament starts at noon. On Sunday, the tournaments are at 2. So every day at noon, you got your tournaments going. Sunday, they go at 2. And then on Saturday, it's the higher stakes tournament that jumps off on Saturday. So you and your buddies from your neighborhood poker tournament, get on over to Prime Social and go play with professional dealers and a great staff, food, beverages, everything waiting for you, including valet parking. They make it so simple, and they are waiting at Prime. PrimeSocialTX.com, 7801 Westheimer, just west of Hillcroft.
This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and SportsMap 94.1. Presented by Coors Light. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas. Here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Lance Zierlein here with Adam Wexler and Del Olale. Tomorrow, a very special guest that are out about this time, Texans head coach Bill O'Brien. I believe the first time he's done an interview with anybody other than Texans radio, probably. Doesn't do a lot of them, but he is going to come on with us tomorrow morning at 7:15. So we're going to visit with the Texans head coach and get his thoughts. The Texans wrap up mini camp officially today. I think they're done practicing.
Yeah, we were out there yesterday. They're not on the field anymore. Yesterday was the last day of that, but big meetings and study time. They're going to have a study hall today over at the facility.
Right. Right. I you know, he still is pretty consistent. He has made some changes. You probably noticed this too. So he came in, let's see, in the 14, 15, 16, 17. So this is going into his fifth season. His very first season, he had the Hard Knocks cameras in his face as well. So we really got an interesting look at Bill O'Brien, a unique look the very first time. I think Bill O'Brien has changed a little bit. I actually think he's mellowed a little bit. Am I wrong in that assessment, Adam?
No, I think you're right.
Yeah, he doesn't get as worked up about certain things, as angry about certain things. And I do think that's kind of normal for head coaches. It was his first time being a head coach in the NFL, so sometimes you'll see that. But his answers, it used to be the players were, you know, hyper-vigilant with, well, I'm just trying to get my nose in the playbook and learn as much as I can. Well, I am just trying to be a good teammate. Like, they would answer from the script, especially young players were kind of forced to answer from the script. And now you can get some real answers from younger players. I mean, look, they're going to give you some of the good teammate stuff, but I noticed a couple years ago that they started giving real answers. And then he'll generally, if you ask a question about a rookie, he will oftentimes, he will immediately deflect the question and say, it's so early, all of these guys are doing this, they all need to do that. And he makes it more about the team. And that was a big focus, was making everything about the team and not the player. When he came in, he took down individual pictures of Pro Bowl, you know, accomplishments and things like that, and wanted to make it team. But he really broke the other day with that tradition by singling out Justin Reed when he was asked about Justin Reed, and really talked about how well he's coming along. He's been very impressive with how he's learned, how he's worked. And I almost started to wonder if he realized when he answered that question that he wanted to start giving a real assessment of Reed, because he was going to be an important part of this defense this year with Andre Hall out.
I think there's almost no question he's going to be an important part of the defense when you consider what they have at safety. How could he not be? I mean, Kareem Jackson's one of your top two safeties, Matthew, Jackson, Reed.
Yeah. Well, who else?
Exactly.
There's no one else.
So he almost has to be, and I think he will be prepared to be, and I think you're definitely on board with this based on your draft evaluations. Almost, you know, looking over the entire Texans draft, every pick after Reed was, how come they're taking this guy here? The Reed pick was the opposite. Really, to me, the only one in the whole draft where I said, I'm absolutely shocked this player is there for them to take.
Yeah, I had Justin Reed. I have a draft grade of 6.06, which is the equivalent of a good NFL starter, and could be and should be an early NFL starter. And what I said about him here, I will lay it out for you. My player comparison, I'm trying to remember who it was. Don't tell me it was Eric Reed.
That's Come on, Lance, you're better than that.
I have to be better than that. I have to say, I guess I don't have a player comp here, but I'm not sure who my player comp was because I don't see one here. But my overview, I just said, Reed is what teams are looking for at the safety position. He's a plus size speed prospect who has the athletic ability to help with man coverage and the instincts and ball skills for ball hawking duties on the back end. Reed can get himself into some trouble when he's overly aggressive, but his positive plays far outweigh the negative. He has the talent to become an early starter and a good one. Reed's instincts and play traits should make him a safe selection with Pro Bowl potential down the road. So that speaks to how strongly, in terms of negative stuff, I had an NFC general manager tell me there aren't too many issues in his game. If he tests well, he could sneak into the back half of the first is my guess. He's better in coverage than his brother. And his brother, of course, is Eric Reed. And that was a GM that did have a need at safety. So I thought that they could end up taking a look at him at some point. So, yeah, Eric Reed's going to play, and he's going to play early. We'll see how he acclimates. I mean, it's not going to be easy. You know, I brought up Andrew Luck throwing football yesterday for the first time in front of the media. But he's throwing a college. He's not throwing a. Did you know he's not throwing a pro size football? He's throwing a college size.
Yeah,
football.
Without saying it a certain way, couldn't you just basically acknowledge he's throwing a deflated NFL football?
Yeah, that's exactly what. Because that's what it is.
That's what it is.
It's easier to grip, ultimately, and it has less weight. And now, but they actually are using a college football. They're not deflating the NFL football. Well, that would be a great troll job from Chris Ballard, who got, the Josh McDaniels stuff. When Josh McDaniels turned his back on the Colts at the last minute to go back to the New England Patriots, Chris Ballard said, the rivalry is back on. It would be great if he said, well, we were having him throw some deflated footballs just so he doesn't, so it's not as much on his arm. If he would have just used the term deflated footballs, that would have been a phenomenal troll job.
Missed opportunity.
Yeah, indeed. So I brought up Gerard Piqué. Is a defender for Spain. He's 31 years old. Now, Spain, Dell, can you tell us why? What was Spain? And I know that soccer, look, it's easy. Since I started following Everton over the last 5 years, the one thing I found with Premier League soccer that you guys who have followed soccer, I mean hardcore, and I know internationally this is the case, but they will get rid of a manager. We call it sacking a manager, Adam. Dell and I call it sacking a manager. They will sack a manager in a heartbeat. It is not that big a deal for you to only get 1 year, and there are times where you might not get that much. But the idea of changing a manager 2 days before an event as big as the World Cup with a team that's as good as Spain, that's pretty unique.
The Spanish contingent did not like the fact that he didn't tell them he was negotiating with one of the biggest clubs in Spain, Real Madrid. And he'll take that job over from Zinedine Zidane, who decided he didn't want to do it anymore. So they said, huh, you are going to negotiate for another job after the World Cup is over without telling us? I guess you got to go. We know we have a real shot to win because we're one of the more talented teams in the world. We start off with our Iberian rival, Portugal, and Cristiano Ronaldo of Real Madrid currently. Who knows where he'll be? But sorry, buddy. By the way, this guy was undefeated.
Right.
At his time, 14-0-6, 20 games without a loss, and they said, you got to go.
They got feelings, man. Why do they catch? I mean, Spain caught feelings. He has not had a loss. So what if he negotiated another contract?
Don't be looking for another job when the most important job of your life is approaching, I guess is what they're saying.
Hot-headed Spanish hot-headed blood. There it is. We gotta come up with, you know, that whole.
Oh, by the way, I don't fault the guy. He would be making triple. I forgot what the number is, but it's an exorbitant amount more money than he would be making as a Spain coach. Being the coach of Real Madrid is very profitable for someone, and he wanted to cash in. The Spanish Federation was like, you could at least told us. Hey, man, you could have told us. So, yeah, they're going to go with an interim and see what happens. But your reference to PK, how the hell does he know anything about Michigan basketball from 1989?
Here's what he said. He said this, Universidad de Michigan, Baloncesto, 1989, campeón de la NCAA. No sería la primera vez que ocurre. Todos unidos ahora más que nunca. Which all means University of Michigan basketball, 1989, NCAA champion. It wouldn't be the first time it happened, PK wrote on Twitter. All together, now more than ever. Hashtag Glenn Rice por vida. He doesn't have Glenn Rice por vida, but he should have hashtag Glenn Rice por vida because that's how they won the national championship. But he was 2 years old. Who gave him Michigan? How did he get Michigan? I have no idea. Unless PK was just a fan of old school college hoops and college basketball before everyone started coming out as high schoolers, and maybe that was the case. Maybe he said, you know, I used to love it before all the high schoolers came in and the international players and ruined the NBA draft where we just didn't know anyone that was getting drafted.
Did he fire this off on Twitter and then post a picture of him sitting in his hotel room with his computer firing off this tweet? Was he wearing a hashtag Romil Robinson jersey?
No, he did. He did not have Romil Robinson. He didn't have that. I can't even, let's see, Glenn Rice, Romil Robinson, because he made big free throws. I don't even remember the rest of that.
Well, I presume it would have been Terry Mills and Mike Griffin and Loy Vaught would have been that
Loy
group.
Loy Vaught, yeah. Yeah, you're right. Loy Vaught, Terry Mills.
Sean Higgins,
yep.
Wex. It was weird for Sergio Ramos, one of his Spanish defenders and teammates, to hear him continue to yell out Bill Frieder, as the Spanish coach was being shown the door. Sergio Ramos is like, what do you mean? Who's Bill Frieder? Which is the reference. Bill Frieder was in line for another job right before the tournament, or at least after the season was over. So Michigan said, get out of here. We're going to let Steve Fisher coach. And he went on to win a national title.
So Sergio was yelling Bill Frieder.
No, Sergio Ramos like, why, PK, why do you keep yelling Bill Frieder? That's not anyone we know.
Bill Frieder. There's no way he was yelling Bill Frieder, Dell.
I'm sure he was pounding on the desk saying a Spanish man is going to coach the Spanish team. You can go off to, I guess that makes Real Madrid the Arizona State of pro soccer. So that's where Frieder went.
It could be. What if PK came back today and look, I know many of you referenced us as really being more of the Flying Illini, a talented team that came up a little short in the tournament. But I really truly see us as a talented team that can go all the way, just like that Michigan team. And then hashtag, you know, Loy Vaught.
Maybe he hires Steve Fisher as an assistant coach for the footy team.
It'd be a hell of a move. If I had a manager, so the World Cup is the most important thing to the nation, like, ever. And they live and die with every game, every goal, every attempt. And that's one of the reasons that I've loved World Cup for so long, is that when I first experienced it and watched it in 94, I was like, holy crap. I mean, everything. And this was, granted, this was when Roberto Baggio was airmailing a penalty kick, but for Italy. But I'll never, you know, when you look at this, if I'm Spain, I'm really surprised that they don't just say, man, we are done with you after the World Cup. How are you letting a manager go? I mean, you must really have feelings if you're letting them go, despite the fact that this guy's never lost a match in international play for you.
There's no better way to prepare for the most important matches of your country's, you know, existence, at least, you know, current day, than sacking the coach. It's a great move. Solid.
I like it.
He's going to be in good shape when they win it all. He's going to just give you, I told you.
That's what he's going to do. Oh, and then you're going to see Gerard Piqué and Glenn Robinson broke the internet with this picture.
Oh, you don't think so?
Oh, you know.
It's definitely, if they win, it's definitely going to happen. Somehow, some way. You're going to have Gerard Piqué will be on the Michigan sideline in next season, and also and also Steve Fisher will be somehow, some way there will be a connection. He'll get a jersey at least.
Ramil Robinson will absolutely be somewhere in the stands wearing a Spain jersey at some point. You know, if they make it all the way to the final match,
maybe Spain's new kit will be baggy shorts and long black socks.
Oh, that's not going to be a good look.
Doesn't Harbaugh take his team to Europe? Don't they?
Yeah, they did this. They did this past year. Well, you're right.
They go. I think they go to Rome. Maybe take a side trip. Go take a side trip to Spain.
Is it 100% locked that PK? It's 100% locked that there will be a picture of PK with someone from Spain, right? I mean, with someone from Michigan.
Oh, it's going to happen at some.
Or
point.
Or Michigan wearing a player from Michigan or tweeting about Spain soccer. Right.
Yes.
That's going to happen.
Yes. And if they're in the cup final, some Michigan player, I don't know, is Duncan Robinson in the, he's in the draft. So, but whoever is still on that roster is going to be wearing a PK jersey, maybe from Barcelona, maybe from Spain. And let's credit PK with one thing. He snagged Shakira like 7 years ago. Like right after.
Oh, that's right. He's with Shakira.
Right after she did that World Cup song in 2010, a year later. They're together.
He's like, damn, girl, I like the way you did the World Cup song.
This time for Africa, I believe is the name. Or Waka Waka, whatever.
Waka Waka.
This time for Africa.
That's it.
It was Vuvuzelas. Then it was. No, that was the same one, wasn't it?
Yeah, 2010 South Africa.
That was the Vuvuzela World Cup. That's what it's known as, the Vuvuzela World Cup. Remember when Gilbert called in and we started playing the Vuvuzela noise, and then Gilbert just started playing the Vuvuzela. He just started making the Vuvuzela noise. Because all it sounded like it was a swarm of bees. That's all it ever sounded like. And Gilbert was, hey, gentlemen, baseball. And then all of a sudden, Chance, I remember, went into the control room and just started playing the Vuvuzela noise. And Gilbert just stopped what he was doing and just went and just started mimicking those awful Vuvuzelas.
That's the sound.
That was what it was.
In the game, yes.
I'll never forget watching a friendly a year before the World Cup and realizing, oh my God.
It might have been the Confederations Cup because that's the pre-tournament. Yeah, so that was where I don't remember. I think the U.S. actually did pretty well on that one.
They did do well.
They made it to the final and lost to Spain, I think 3-2 or something like that. Or Brazil 3-2, excuse me. And that's where we were all introduced, and people were like, is that going to be a thing? Yes, it was going to be a thing, and it was a year later.
And it was a thing. Let's break it right here. We come back. We'll jump back into something that is Astros related. I want to do that. And then we need to follow up on the LeBron story. The more I'm reading about the comments that Mary Ridenour made from the Akron Beacon Journal, the more I realize it's a wrap for the Rockets and any kind of concerns about LeBron James. There's a lot of stuff coming out here that does not look good for the Houston Rockets if you are counting on LeBron James being a Houston Rocket. I want to tell you about Men's Tee Clinic. That's something you can't count on. There's certain things you don't control in your life, and one of them is if your testosterone level is going to drop. It's naturally man-made, but if your testosterone level begins to drop, you don't have any real control. There are some things that you can do that can help it, you know, drop more, but there's not really anything you're going to be able to do about it. 1 in 3 men over the age of 40 suffer from lower testosterone, and when that happens, it can have a big impact on a variety of things, but it's your overall quality of life. And when I say quality of life, I mean your energy level, I mean your mental acuity, I mean that ability to have the drive that you need, whether it's, you know, at home or at the workplace. You need to have that drive and that energy and that get up and go. And a lot of times that's going to be missing if you don't have your testosterone levels where they need to be. Another big difference is that you don't process belly fat and a lean muscle mass. So if you're a guy who works out all the time, you say, I just don't see the same results. There is a good chance that lower testosterone is one of the culprits there. Go to my friends at Men's Tee Clinic. They have a provider that sees you every single time. They give you tests, you know, it's like quarterly to measure the effectiveness of what they're, the dosage they're giving you, and that way they can make adjustments if they need to. They are very careful with your health and your overall well-being, and you are going to benefit greatly from having your testosterone level back to where it used to be, and you get back to who you used to be. And that's something we all want. Go to menstclinic.com or check out their four locations, Pasadena, Pearland. You've got a location in Cypress, and the one that I go to at 1801 Durham at I-10 in the Heights. Make sure for more information that you go to menstclinic.com.
Yo, I go by the name of Dane Jones. I'm with my crew, and we gonna show y'all what we be snacking on. You dig?
This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and SportsMap 94.1. Presented by Coors Light. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas. Here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
What you know about this, Adam Wexler? You probably know a lot because you have two kids. But my guess is your kids don't eat hot Cheetos and Takis because a lot of kids aren't sure they can handle hot Cheetos and Takis, especially Takis. Takis are a little hot.
Very hot. Insanely hot.
Yeah, Takis have some... I think Takis is your... Dell, I feel like it's one of those, like... I see a lot of... Where I live is kind of a diverse area. I can go to a lot of different types of stores. Sometimes we call them bodegas. And I can go in and I can see, like, some Takis. That's why I knew what Takis were. And I'll never forget that I have one. I'm like, this is not for children. Takis are not for children. This stuff is spicy. It is you're drawing a line in the sand. Like, if your kid eats Takis, he's going to be okay for a lot of different types of food, or she is.
Yeah, the rodeo doesn't crumble up Taki dust and put it on pizzas and other things. They do hot Cheetos. Even the rodeo knows there's a level that their customers don't want to reach. Takis takes it to another level.
Yeah, there's levels to this game. And hot Cheetos. Now, hot Cheetos has some, you know, they have some heat, but the Takis put a little more heat on it. Of course, they got a little lime twist to it also. But I don't actively buy Takis, but I saw them in my house about 6 months ago before I'd ever heard this song. And I said, who has Takis here? Or is mom having some type of an affair with a guy who is a painter here in the house?
So she's
because
super careful.
I don't see Takis a lot.
She's super careful about keeping a fairly important secret from you, but she's foiled by having the Takis in the pantry.
Oh, I immediately, when I saw Takis, I'm like, oh, this is curious. What am I going to find next? A Bimbo package somewhere in the backyard? An unwrapped Bimbo package it wasn't
thrown
away? We're
a hostess family, okay?
Yeah. Bimbo, this is highly unusual. Oh, Takis are in here as well. A purple Takis bag. I know something's up now. Now I got to look into what's going on, start checking under the bed. So one of my kids, I said, who's got these Takis? And I think it was my son, Mason. I'm like, Mason? Mason can't even, he gets to the dinner table and, too much heat. I'm like, this is grilled chicken. What are you talking about, too much heat? And then you're eating Takis? No. And then so Snacks had to take over the Takis, and he had to just roll with the Takis. And I think Snacks found out about Takis from his friend, who is Hispanic. I think that's how Snacks found out about Takis. And he was okay with it, but he didn't get it again. That was a one-time shot, and he's like, yeah, I'm good. Let me just have about three or four of these, and then we're done with Takis.
Man, you better tell your kids to put those in a burrito and keep it moving.
Yeah. No, look.
That's what
Taco Bell
does.
Oh, did you?
Growing up, it wasn't Takis because I don't know if there were a thing.
Not there yet.
In Southern California, but or anywhere at that point. But, yeah, you get the hot Cheetos and you throw them in your burrito that you microwaved in the school microwave, and that's how you lived. That was lunch. There's one kid who always had a bag of hot Cheetos, most popular kid at lunch.
Of course.
He had the big, giant bag back when they were still 99 cents, and everyone loved that kid.
I'm going to guess here, Wex. I'm going to guess, and I might be wrong, but I'm going to do a personality profile on you. I'm going to guess that you were a take-your-lunch-to-school kid in elementary until you got to junior high. Yes or no?
You're profiling me fairly well. Yeah.
And then at junior high, you went into junk food mode, and you couldn't believe it, and you were super excited that you got to get donuts or pizza or whatever you wanted.
I'm pretty sure I helped to liquidate the vending machine from peanut butter bars.
Okay. So I've been fairly accurate.
You've nailed it every step of the way.
And then in high school, you kind of straightened it out a little bit, but you weren't really – I don't know if you guys – so we had two separate ones. You could have the school lunch side, and then there was the snack bar side where you could buy – you know, you could go a little rogue on that side.
You had to go that side.
Yeah, but you had to have a little more money for the rogue side. The school lunch side is where you got your surprise hamburgers, which was, you know, the meat just in a big giant roll. And you're like, oh, surprise. It's called a surprise hamburger because it's ground meat in a roll. I got you. Or the rice with cheese sauce and chopped ham. But the cheese sauce was really just a granulated powder that somehow magically became cheese later on. I was in that line probably a little more than I was in a snack bar line because my mom was not giving me a lot of money for the snack bar side. But when I did go to snack bar side, I mean, there was – it was straight junk food.
Of course it was. You're on your own. This is how you learn to eat in college.
It is true. It is true. And that's how I learned to eat in college because, man, I am a firm believer that learning to eat in college, if you have no money or if you have a meal plan and it doesn't work on the weekends or whatever, whatever it is, you learn about ramen. You learn about how to turn a loaf of bread into grilled cheese every day. Or just you learn the deliciousness of cinnamon toast like I did. If I wanted dessert, cinnamon toast. That's all that was.
Well, cereal any meal of the day was always kind of like, yeah, I'm down.
When mom didn't have, when there was no milk at the house, I tried orange juice in the Fruity Pebbles one time.
Once.
It was okay. It was all right.
One
it was
time.
Okay. Yeah, I did. Well, also I didn't like Fruity Pebbles. I was a Cocoa Pebbles kid. So, that was me. I was glad I could personality profile you. I feel like...
I'm pretty easy to profile, don't you think?
Yeah. And was your food, was your... the stuff that your mom packed, was it good or did you give it away? Were you trading it for junk food?
No, I ate it.
Sandwiches, peanut butter and jelly.
Not peanut butter and jelly.
We had bologna sandwiches.
Cold cuts, man.
All right. That's where the
cheapies.
Profiling stops. All right, we'll get to some Gambino outro here for you right here with Dell. When we come back, I do want to mention Glenn Davis is going to join us at the bottom of the next hour, and we're going to get you a heads up on your World Cup, what to look for if you are going to be a World Cup watcher. And Dell, I have asked Dell to come up with some help for me in the futures markets. He did pretty good in college basketball, Adam, and I'm going to see if he can do the same thing in the World Cup when we return. We'll start getting into more with your phone call, 713-780-3777.
So, you want to go out tonight but don't know where to go? Easy fix. Head over to culturemap.com for the latest social happenings going on in the city. The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and SportsMap 94.1. Presented by Coors Light. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas. Here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Coming up at 8 o'clock, you have a chance to win a pair of tickets to see international rugby. It's USA versus Scotland, the fifth-ranked team in the world. That would be the Scottish. Don't miss the epic battle at BBVA Compass Stadium Saturday. This Saturday, June 16th, kickoff is at 8 p.m., but come early for the Rugby Fan Fest. Tickets are on sale now, so if you don't win them from us, check it out at usarugby.org and order your tickets right now. It'll be caller 12 at 8 o'clock. This is a chance for everybody, streamers, 94.1, 97.5 listeners. 8 o'clock, caller 12 wins two tickets to USA Rugby versus Scotland out at BBVA Compass. Now back to Adam and Lance.
So the World Cup predictor came out from 538, Nate Silver's analytics-driven subsite on ESPN. They can predict just about anything and everything out there. And Dale, you've looked at this, haven't you? I think you've seen this.
I've seen it.
World Cup predictor. It's pretty interesting. They've got the SPI, which is their standard kind of measurement for success. They've got offensive ratings, defensive ratings, percentage of making the round of 16, making the semifinals, making a final. The teams with the highest percentage of making the final are Spain at 29%, Brazil 31%, Germany at 24%. So Germany, by the way, is I don't believe they're the actual favorite. I think Brazil is the actual favorite in the World Cup. And then odd to win the World Cup, Spain is second. Remember, this is the same team we talked about that just got rid of their manager. So Spain is at 17%, and Brazil is at 19%, followed by Germany at 13%, and then everyone else. So are you familiar with Dell watches a decent amount of college basketball, Wex. Did you know this?
Yes, I did.
Okay. So last year, as I'm looking around and saying, hey, who are some futures, some teams before the tournament was actually even seeded, I said, who are some teams that could be dangerous in the tournament? And Dell gave me Villanova was the obvious choice, but they
super
were still,
sleeper Villanova. He started with that,
but they still had decent odds. Like you could still get decent odds for being a favorite. You had Michigan. Who was the other team, Dell?
I had three of the four Final Four teams. Oddly enough, I didn't pick Loyola. whoever the third Final Four team, I had them too. I don't remember who it was though.
I can't remember who it was, but you had all three. And if you had all three, then I had all three of those Final Four teams. So that was nice to have. So now, Dell, I'm going to go back to the well again and find out. I need to know, and you got the different groups, and I need to know if you have been looking around and trying to find some good values, because I can also text it to John so that John will have something to watch.
I'm looking to make YouTube money. That's my goal here.
No, not money. I just want to watch
what?
Just for a – I'm in a pool.
You're just in a pool.
I'm just in a pool, and the winner is going to donate money to charity.
Huh.
Yep. Yeah.
Seems unlikely. I would say England is catching a lot of flack. Not a lot of people – well, because of their history of underperforming, and not a lot of people think this team has what it takes to even get to a semifinal, maybe not even a quarterfinal. But I would say I would look out for England, because if I look at their matchup in the group in the possible second round, if Colombia can win their group they would need an upset, because I don't think they're taking out Belgium, but England, if they can find some fortune in that second group where they don't have to face Colombia in that second group, that second round, I think they've got a real shot to get to a quarterfinal. I mean, but there is the Colombian standing in the way. But to be honest, I'm looking at if we go by Nate Silver, England has a better shot to make it to a final or to win the whole thing than Colombia does in his eyes. So I think England might be a little undervalued because people just expect kind of the worst from them because of their history. So I would take a look at them. As I continue to move up, Mexico's going to – I think they're out in the second round. I think they lose to Brazil. I would probably look at Denmark as well. They are in the group with France and Peru, which is actually a pretty strong group. But if they can get out of that second round – I know Argentina might be waiting for them, but that's an Argentina team that might be Messi and nobody else. That's still the question about them. So if I don't know about getting to a final from Denmark or even a semifinal, but I think if they can get out of their group, I might take them in a second round matchup versus Argentina. There's going to be a lot of pressure on Messi. This is his final World Cup. He played pretty well in the previous one, but I feel like there's not a lot around him besides, well, him. So I will take a look at Denmark as well. And it's in Europe, which always adds to it. Brazil's the only team, a non-European team, to win a World Cup on that continent. It's always a little tricky for South American teams there. I would take a look at Denmark versus Argentina if that matchup comes around.
I'm going to throw some actual – my buddy says go with Belgium. And Belgium's the other favorite with England in that group. I don't know. We'll find out what the numbers are. I'll bring the numbers up, and later on in the next hour, either before or while we have Glenn Davis on, we'll actually get into some of the odds and some of the numbers so that you guys can fire at that. And I'll give you actual odds so you can make that determination. ESPN has done a really good job of giving you a list of 50 players to watch during the World Cup. 538, I recommend that if you are interested in projections of where teams could end up in the World Cup. Even though the U.S. isn't in it, I'm not going to lie. I do wish the U.S. was in the World Cup, and it would be more interesting with U.S. in the World Cup, clearly. But I usually watch most of the matches in the World Cup anyway, even when the U.S. isn't playing. So I'm not, you know, just because they're not on doesn't mean I'm going to watch it any less. And I believe the matches are on at favorable times, right?
Yeah, for us, particularly the job you do. the first match is today at 10, but they're going to be earlier than that. Yeah, but considering how much time you spend here, you could be all the World Cup games could be over before you decide to go home. So for the day, so you could watch them while you're working, and then when you're doing your other stuff, your NFL stuff, they're going to be games on during that time too.
And that's what I'm doing.
And at least for the next couple of days, while you're focused in on all that stuff, John, were he to be here, he'd probably be watching Jordan Spieth blowing up at the U.S. Open.
That's exact. Actually, you're right. It would be Jordan Spieth. He would not be watching any World Cup. It would all be Jordan Spieth talk.
Well, Spieth and McIlroy and Phil were in a group that teed off early this morning on the back nine. And Spieth threw two holes. He went over par on the first hole. He went plus one, bogeyed. Then he went three over par on his second hole. So he's plus four through two at the U.S. Championship, at the U.S. Open.
Hmm. Well, that's tough to come back from at a U.S. Open.
You would
go
think.
Down plus four. I mean, look, plus four is usually within striking distance if you're in the final, you know, if you're like in the second hole in the final round. Not so much if you're at the second hole of the tournament.
I do think the scores are going to be pretty stinky, which is, I think, how the USGA wants it, based on what it looks like out there. So I don't think he's going to be the only one who throws up some pretty ugly stuff. But that's a pretty poor start, just to be blunt.
Del, John Granato, how much more soccer World Cup action is he going to watch than U.S. Open action over the next 4 days?
Well, the U.S. Open, when does it air? Because I know he has a golf channel, so he'll be able to find it there. But the U.S. Open is usually on Fox, right?
It is, and it is.
It's still going to – how are they going to broadcast the World Cup games as well over the weekend?
It's only 4 days of golf, and FS1 will lend a hand with a lot of hours of coverage early.
Yeah, and there's no U.S. that they have to cram onto the actual big network. I think they might do that with Mexico in this country. He's going to watch quite – the World Cup will be auxiliary.
He will watch zero World Cup, 100% U.S. Open.
I think he will watch World Cup as long as it doesn't conflict. Like, if he gets up for whatever reason really early and the golf hasn't started, the World Cup is on early. He can get up and watch a game and then, like, kind of transition right in the golf. Oh, and by the way, caller 12 for the rugby ticket, since we're talking about international sports here. USA versus Scotland, caller 12 gets the chance to go see that June 16th at BVVA. So that's a couple days away.
But the only reason he's watching U.S. Open golf, Lance and Dell, is purely because he's an American, and he wants to see America compete, and they're not competing in the World Cup. But guys like Brendan Steele and Brooks Koepka and Cooch, Pat Reed, they are competing for America at the U.S. Open.
You're making jokes, but that might very well be his reasoning for watching more golf, because it's American.
Yeah, because it's American. By the way, I wonder if Matt Kuchar likes the nickname Cooch.
How could he not, Lance? Come on, think about it.
I feel like he just, guy, can y'all call me something like, well, yo, you want us to call you Coochie?
Well, let me ask you this.
No,
all right. Maybe John would have a better answer, but I'm going to ask you. You're a pro golfer. I'm going to ask you a hypothetical. Either, you know, forget about what their names actually are. Just know who the person is. Are you saying Mr. Matt K appreciates the nickname Cooch, say, less than if he was Justin Thomas or Smiley Kaufman or Jason Duffner? Those guys might appreciate it and have more fun with it than the actual Cooch does?
Yeah, I got a funny feeling Jason Duffner is going to be clowning him for having a nickname the Cooch or the Coocher or Coochie. I think all of those are going to be jokes. And we have to break it right now. But because trust me, that's another topic that Granato could go on and on about for a while. I do want to get to so that I can tell you about my friends over at Bill Advisor. It's an easy text, money, to 232323. That is to get a homeowner's insurance quote. And you know how easy it is? If you text money to 232323, it'll take just a matter of seconds, and it will say, give us your address. You type in your address, and there will be a small delay, and then you're going to get a text back, and it says, this is what our quote is to insure your home. Now, you can make some changes to the quote. You can say, okay, well, I'd like to also, you know, have this covered. I'd like to have this covered. I'd like to have this covered. What I found was that I was with the same company for 10 years, and what I had my home insured at was for that original value. My home's gone up in value, and yet my coverage hasn't. And so I went with my friends over at Bill Advisor. I texted money to 232323. I got $100,000 more in coverage for a house, and I got that for $700 less. And all of it took place with text message transactions back and forth that took up very little of my time. Do the same thing. Text money to 232323 and get your no strings attached quote today for what your home owner's insurance could be at your home. That's BillAdvisor.com.
This is DeAndre Hopkins, wide receiver for the Houston Texans, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.